Welcome back to Officially Unofficial, presented by Blue Wire Podcast. I'm your host, the former face of junior college baseball, the Fall American, Johnny Junta. And we're joined by a special guest, man, a guy that's 12th ranked prospect for the Seattle Mariners. Is that good? You tell me. It is Zach Deloach. How are we doing, brother?
I'm doing great. How you doing, John?
Good. And I just got to ask you here, is this the first podcast you've done with the host sitting on his fucking floor?
I'll have to say that's a first for me, yeah.
And this is how I know you're a baller, and I'll say this. Obviously, we get tons of guests on the show, humble brag, but I know you're a baller because you're wearing an Evo Shield long sleeve to the interview. Like, usually the guys wear, like, a hoodie or just flannel or whatever. You're just in game mode right now. It looks like you wear that under your jersey. So I just want to give credit to you for just being a big baseball guy and rocking that.
I appreciate it, man. It's actually I don't ever wear this underneath my jersey. I guess I could, but it's like a cotton material, and I don't know. I think it's really comfy. So
I respect it. So what do you do though? Like, what do you do under your jersey? Like, are you a long sleeve guy, or do you never wear? Like, are you nails where you never wear long sleeves? Like, where do you go?
So most of the time I'm wearing either like a short cutoff, or I'm wearing one that just kind of is just like a tight fitting shirt. And then I'll wear a arm sleeve most of the time with taped up wrists on the left side. So, yeah, that's kind of my go-to. Last night I did – every now and then I'll do like three-quarter.
Yeah.
And then I'll tape up both wrists. That's kind of like my second go-to. But, yeah, anytime it's cold outside, I'm like – because in the outfield it just gets cold and lonely. So I just bundle up as much as I can.
So are you superstitious with what you wear? Like, for instance, for me, I always had to wear, and obviously it didn't work because I was absolutely dog shit in junior college, but did you always, like, I always had to wear, like, a left arm, so like a white arm sleeve on my catching hand, but then nothing on my right-handed side? Like, what, are you superstitious with what you have to wear? If you're buzzing, are you wearing the same shit, or what's the deal?
Yeah, I'm a little superstitious. Like, I always have to be wearing, like, some sort of wristband. So, like, right now I have, like, two of them on me, but... wristbands, I would say cleats are definitely superstitious for me. Like, there's one pair of cleats that have gotten me nowhere this year. They don't have any knocks in them, so I kind of just like threw them away.
I respect and then, that
yeah I just threw them away and but yeah, like, I think overall, like, just going through the same routine every day, like, that just gets me ready for the games.
Okay, so what – and I have a bone to pick with our guy Adam Frazier, by the way, that I will say on this show. Adam Frazier switched his walk-up song. It was supposed to be Pony, which obviously gets the women and everyone in the crowd going. He switched it to Still Dre or something like that, or I don't know what the fuck. That I got a bone to pick with him. I will have to message him again to talk about it, or maybe when he's in Toronto we'll talk about it. But what is your walk-up song? Because obviously I'm a big walk-up song guy, and Adam Frazier knows that, which is why he knows I'm disappointed. He knows I'm disappointed that he switched it from Pony. What is your walk-up song? Like, what do you do to get the people going? Is it superstitious? Yeah. Like, what do you do?
I don't really. So last year I did Notorious Big. I was a big Notorious Big guy. So I was all about him. And then I did Hypnotize, sorry. And then this year I'm doing Kick It in the Sticks by Brantley Gilbert. And I'm doing, sorry, I just kind of get a little early this morning trying to get my brain on, you know. God, what's the name of that song? I don't know why I just forgot it.
So you're a Brantley Gilbert guy. I was the same guy.
Yeah.
You know what song I had? And this is crazy. So the song that I had when I was in JUCO, and it makes zero sense because I'm from a big town. It was Small Town Throwdown by Brantley Gilbert. And obviously, I'm not a big country guy now anymore as I used to be. I don't know. I guess it's kind of accustomed to it when you live in Nebraska. But
yeah,
Small Town Throwdown was an absolute track. Like, that's a track that gets the people going, especially when you're in McCook, Nebraska. But Brantley Gilbert's kind of like, is he done? Like, what is this guy? I haven't heard a song from him in like years.
I don't think he's done. I think he's just taking it easy. You know, he's already made a good bit of money. Like, he's probably just living his life.
What, do you know what song it was?
Yes. The other one, Soul Survivor.
I don't know if I've heard of that. Soulja Boy. Holy. You say Soulja Boy?
Oh, wait, sorry. There's an Akon. Hold on.
It has to be Akon. Yeah, I think it's Akon. Soul Survivor?
Yeah, Jeezy and Akon. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Okay. Anyways, though, so we mentioned the country and you're from Texas and all that kind of stuff, or you played in Texas. Mm-hmm. How country would you say that you are? Like, because I have a rule in this podcast, it's don't fuck with guys that wear cowboy boots. Are you a cowboy boot guy, cowboy hat guy? Like, did you wear that at your wedding?
I did not wear that at my wedding, but I was very tempted to. I got shut down by my wife.
Good. I respect that. So she's already good in my books. It's a tough look, the cowboy boots at the wedding.
Yeah. But no, I do like to wear cowboy boots. I have 3 pairs currently. I really want a pair of alligator boots, but they're really expensive. So I don't know if I can go that route. But at some point, I do want to get some like ostrich and alligator boots. So
yeah, it's just
that's definitely on the bucket list.
So obviously, like you play with a lot of guys like from where, like the Northeast and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the biggest difference from guys like me? Obviously, I'm from Toronto. Compared to like where you live, like it obviously, like is it just like the way that they act, like the way that they dress? Like, what was like the biggest difference you noticed from these type of guys? Obviously, you went to school with a lot of them as well.
I would say there's a lot of like funny sayings that are like different between like the South and like Northeast, Midwest, all that. You know, it's like the saying, like in the South we always say like, "Can I have a Coke?" Or and then in the Midwest it's like, "Hey, let me get a soda pop." Or
Dude, the South is electric to me, man. Like, obviously you got the college football and all that kind of stuff. I'm just so fascinated by like just the way that they act, like where that you guys act up there. Like, I feel like in my mind, obviously I'm a big dip guy. I feel like you just start dipping when you're like 12 in Texas. Like, it's just something that you like you and the old man just have a dip in your truck.
I personally never started dipping, but like, I mean, it is pretty prominent from that standpoint. I mean, every single summer coach that I had growing up always had a hog in. And I'd say probably half of my teammates just from 13 to 14 and up.
That's like, so just sick.
Always dipping. So
that's so sick.
I mean, it's normal. I mean, and like, I would say, you're talking about football, like, football is king in Texas, for sure. Like, baseball's pretty close behind it, but I would definitely say like Friday Night Lights, like, and then obviously like college football Saturdays. Like, you go to any big game in Texas, like, you're gonna get a packed crowd. Like, everyone loves their football.
And you mentioned Friday Night Lights, which is something, another thing that I'm just so fascinated about, because our high school athletics here get like 10 fans a game. What's it like a Friday? Like, apparently in small towns in like Texas, or even in Texas in general, like the whole town closes down just for the college football game. Is that how it is, like where you're from?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, so where I went to high school, it's called Hebron High School, and it was in the Metroplex. So like, it wasn't a small high school. it was a 6A. I don't know if they've reclassified. I don't know if there's a 7A currently. There should be. Because you got schools like Allen and Southlake and McKinney and schools that are 7,000, 8,000 plus students in high school, which is ridiculous.
Jesus Christ.
There's so many schools that are like that now. It's like, probably, I would say if they did make a 7A, they would be very competitive. And, you know, those are schools that are like 5,000 plus kids. So,
that is just idiotic. And did you feel like the second fiddle at that school? Obviously, you said football is the big dog, stuff like that. But are the baseball players kind of looked over there? Like, is the football guys like getting all the good? Like, what's it like there? Like, the football guys compared to the baseball guys? Like,
when girls are going to chase after the football guys because football is like the king there. But I think sometimes, like, you know, you'll get like the hidden treasure. We're kind of like the hidden treasure, you know, in a way.
The underrated prospect.
That's kind of the way I look at it.
That's so sick, dude. It's like, so would the baseball team there get a lot of fans to their games as well? Or is it just like the football team gets, or because massive there?
No, when we were good, I mean, obviously our football team did. I mean, they make a ton of money just from fans and, you know, fundraising and stuff like that. But like, when I was there, like, our baseball team was actually pretty good. Like, we made playoffs every single year. And we or sorry, at least, sorry, my last year we didn't make it, but the first 3 years I was there, we were really good. And I think we had potential to win the state championship. And, you know, we ended up losing, I think, in the third or fourth round in two of those years to the same team, Keller. That's who, you know, the name Shea Langlers.
Yeah, Shea Langlers. He's disgusting. He is so fucking good.
Yeah, so he basically put the team on his back and beat us in playoffs. Like, he would go 2 for 3 or 3 for 4 and then come in and throw 94, 95 off the bump. Like, just disgusting.
So anyways, good.
So, but yeah, we would get a decent amount of fans. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, college baseball, but, you know, we'd get, you know, hundreds of fans, like, in the stands sometimes, like, especially if it was a big playoff game. So,
yeah, and I got to ask you about a friend of the show. I don't know if you guys kind of crossed paths. I think you did. He's a Texas legend. It's a guy that goes by the name, as a friend of the podcast, Grayson Rodriguez. Did you get to face this guy in high school? Because I just hear urban legends about this guy just absolutely carving people.
So funny story. He's actually from the same area that my grandpa's from, in Nacogdoches. My grandpa lives in Bullard, and Nacogdoches is really close. And Nacogdoches, I think when he was there, was either 2 or 3A school. So I never personally got to face him. I mean, I've heard a lot about him. I heard he was a big dude, threw really hard. I knew he was going to go first, you know, first round of the draft, obviously. But, yeah, I was definitely curious to see how he was going to pan out in pro ball. And, like, he's doing one hell of a job. So, yeah, kudos to him. I mean, he's throwing gas and striking people out. So, I mean, good for him.
There's a couple guys that went to your high school that played football, or, like, NFL guys or big time college guys that you got to watch throughout high school, mm-hmm. or see at these high school games?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the first name that comes to mind is, you know, a guy that went to Hebron High School is Jamal Adams.
Oh my god.
For the Seahawks, yeah.
He went to your school?
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Yeah, I remember I remember after he had signed his big contract with Jordan and obviously, you know, signed in the first round. He showed up to our school to do like a workout, and he had like all these like camera people like coming out, like doing a professional film for him for Jordan, I guess. And he rolled up in a brand new Porsche, you know, had President Mall on the side. It was blacked out. Like, it was sick. Now, that was the one thing I remember, just like, man, like, this dude's got so much money right now. Like, he didn't know what to do with it.
It's crazy. That's crazy.
But, and then, yeah, and then obviously watching Kyler Murray ball out for Allen, I mean, that was incredible. I mean, that dude's the best high school quarterback, if you're asking me, in the country.
Better than Johnny Manziel?
He was undefeated and won 4 straight state championships. I mean, you can't.
Damn, I didn't realize he won 4 in a row, dude.
He was undefeated in college football. I mean, in high school football.
That is so fucked. So was he? Because obviously, yeah, he was nasty. He went to Oklahoma for baseball, but. So was he not good at baseball as well?
Well, no, he started out at A&M. Yeah, he started out his freshman year at A&M, and something to do with like playing time. I think like his dad kind of got into it with, you know, one of the offensive coordinators or head coach or something, and basically said, "I'm taking my son. We're transferring," kind of thing, and that's basically what happened. And it was funny because he was supposed to play baseball that spring for A&M, and they actually had a glove like made for him and stuff. And so whenever I showed up, they still had that glove, and he never got to touch it. So
that's incredible.
Like, set up for him and everything. So
damn, that's, you should have took the glove. I would have took the glove if I was you.
I wish I could have. They had too many eyes on it.
Yeah, for sure. That shit's probably on eBay right now because that shit was never used. But Kyler Murray, yeah, that is a crazy story, man. I'm just, like I said earlier, man, I'm just so fascinated by, like, high school athletics. Obviously, I don't care enough to really watch them. Love hearing the stories of, like, just guys like – obviously, I'm not really good friends with Blair Henley as well. And mm-hmm. Blair Henley threw 3 straight no-hitters in high school, which is just like, what the fuck? Like, just some of, like, these guys that just go on to play for, like, Texas A&M, stuff like that. Who's a couple baseball players that you played against that are, like, big prospects now? Obviously, besides yourself. Like, who's a couple big-time? Groshans, maybe?
Like in high school?
Yeah, in high school that you played
in high
against.
School, so too many. Too many to count. I mean, if you just start throwing names out, I've probably played against them. I mean, because you take, like, if you take between like school baseball, like in the spring, and then like summer ball, like I've definitely played probably mostly everyone.
Like Groshans. Like
anyone do what?
Groshans. Jordan Groshans?
Yeah, I play summer ball with him.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, he's disgusting.
Like growing up. Like I'm talking like since we were probably like 8.
Really?
Played against him.
Dude, like, and Kanan Smith and Jigba, obviously, he was his brother. So his brother was one of those high school guys, right? Because he told on the podcast that, like, when his brother's team would be playing in high school, there would just be, like, thousands on thousands of people just watching his brother. And
well,
like,
it's funny. It's like, I've known Kanan and Jackson both. I've known their family since I was probably, like, 9.
Really?
So, I mean, so, like, I got to watch, you know, both of them grow up. Obviously, Kanan I played with. But Jackson was, it was funny because like we thought he was going to be a big basketball guy. He was a huge basketball guy when he was growing up. Like I don't think he touched football until he got to middle school, maybe.
Holy fuck, man.
And he's just a super athlete. And yeah, I think the rest is history, obviously, but like he's, I mean, you're talking about that one single season, you know, record breaking KO. I mean, that was, I was watching that live too, and I was like, oh my goodness.
He is just like, I can't even believe it. Like, I talked to Jackson, and obviously I talked to Jackson about it, and it's like,
yeah,
it's just so, they're just so accustomed to it because they're just both such sick athletes. Like, right. Kanan Smith's in AAA is going to be in the show probably this year, I'm assuming. And then his brother is going to probably go top 10 picks in the NFL draft next year. Like, imagine being, if I was their parent, I would be the cockiest fucking dude of all time. Like, if both of my sons were like that, it's crazy. And Jackson, like, was he always, because you mentioned he put that football, like, did he ever play baseball or no? You just always football, basketball.
He never played baseball, but he would always come to the games with their dad, Mata. It's funny, he's actually a firefighter.
So he's probably yoked. Is he one of those dads that are just yoked out of their mind and just like training their kids?
He's a big dude. Yeah, I'll just put it that way. I
love Kanan Smith, bro. He's just such a good dude, man. He seriously is. They're one of those guys that I hope he just makes it big in baseball and stuff. And he was like so electric as well. So I mean, and you're talking about the baseball and stuff like that, and obviously the high school baseball here, we have to go to like Florida or Arizona or Texas to like play good competition and stuff like that.
Right.
If you throw below 95, like you said, in like 6A or 7A, right? Are you kind of like a bum? Like, not 95, that's obviously what I said. If you throw below like 90, are you looked upon as like kind of like a dog shit arm in like high school there?
In high school, no, I wouldn't say so. I mean, I think in high school, it's really about like pitchability because like you're going to get a mix of different, you know, walks of life in baseball to where you could be effective if you're not throwing, you know, 90 plus in high school. So I think, but I do think like, the more competitive teams that we played, like definitely had arms that were 90 to 95 plus. Like I remember my freshman year, we had, that's when Flower Mound High School won the state championship and their starting rotation was Kyle Johnston. He was 95 to 97, went to Texas.
Jesus Christ,
it was,
man.
BJ Myers. He was 92 to 94. Went to West Virginia, and then Seth Meyer, who was a lefty, he threw 92 to 95.
That's not a high school team, bro. Like that team could probably compete in college. Like that.
And then he went to West Virginia too. So like, and then a few of their bullpen arms went D1 also, and then I think a good portion of like their position guys also went D1.
That's so crazy. That's just so crazy, dude. Let's talk about Texas A&M because obviously we've had ton of University of Texas guys on this podcast, if you look at the guest list. Do you hate University of Texas? Like, when you go to A&M, obviously that rivalry runs deep, and it's no joke. I mean, I see it on Twitter with Occupy Left Field and all those guys. They legit, like, hate you guys. Like, it's crazy. What's the player rivalry like there? Because obviously you played against these guys growing up, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think I made it a point for whenever I got to A&M that we were going to beat Texas a lot and that we were going to beat TCU a lot. Just kind of had that vendetta against them. I don't know why. I mean, I do know why. Probably shouldn't say anything, but my cousin and my aunt both went to UT. So it kind of makes it a little more difficult. Like when you like, so we can't really talk about like some college stuff around them, but yeah, no, I definitely They're famous.
You need them.
Let me just put it that way.
It's and obviously it's good for the sport. It's good for the sport, and it's good for, like, I just love those games where it's like A&M versus Texas baseball. I'm not a big college baseball guy, but obviously you see the games, there's a lot of the horns down stuff. And you can be honest here, this is a truth circle. Have you thrown up the horns down in a baseball game at the University of Texas or against them?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, I definitely have. I mean, I never got caught on camera, but yeah, I definitely have.
We need to find a picture of you doing. I'm going to make that the episode graphic. Doing the horns down. Dude, it's such a funny thing.
It's always the pitcher, though. Like, the pitcher's always, like, the last one who throws the pitch, like, strike out the dude or get the pop-up, and the pan's back to him, and it's usually like, let's go.
How mad – isn't it kind of crazy how mad they get, though? Like, they seriously – like, it's like you just murdered someone with how pissed they get.
Well, I remember when – who was it? Cody Clemens. It was in the we were playing them in the regional in Austin, and like he had like a 3-run home run against us, and he was giving us like the horns up, like staring at all of us, like going through the dugout, and I was like, dude, get some freaking balls, like don't do that.
And it's not even like a ball. And listen, obviously you've had Cody on the show a long time ago, and all those guys from that team, like Chase Sugart, Nolan King, we've had all those guys on, but majority of them don't really give a fuck if you do horns down. It's just like a select few that take it so serious to the point where it's like, dude, like, just fucking relax. Like, it's obviously, I believe there's a taunting penalty now for it in college football. Is that correct? Yeah. Like, how does that even make sense?
I don't know. I think it's soft.
It's so soft. If you see the horns up, the horns down should be allowed, plain and simple.
Exactly. Like looking at that's only fair, right?
And did you guys have any like close calls of them? Like, not benches clearing, but like close calls where it's like, all right, like someone might get thrown out here.
I think we had a few. I do know our head coach. Like, got into it a little bit with the umpire, like basically telling their dugout to calm down, like. I mean, they're getting pretty rowdy. I mean, every game that we played against them was just super, super, like, packed out. Like, there wasn't a seat to fill in that stadium. Like, it was always sold out, whether it was in Austin or in College Station. So, I mean, it was definitely those games. I mean, our student section would show up, like, before we even took BP. And we were the first ones to take BP. So it was like – it was like packed out from the beginning, like ever since, like once we started stretching on the field at from like 3 hours before the game starts. I mean, it's packed out.
Yeah. I mean, I love that stadium, by the way. That stadium's so nice to play at. What's the visitor's locker room like there? Is it nice?
At Bluebell?
Yeah.
Or are you talking about at?
No, sorry. At the dish.
At the dish? It's average. I mean, it's not anything special. As long as it's honestly air conditioned, as long as we each have a locker and a chair, like that's, I mean, you don't really need much.
So did Texas not recruit you? Like, how did that, like, or why you just come to A&M so early? Is that why you hate them also?
No. They did recruit me. It was actually, I think that was my second offer at the time. And I was in my sophomore fall. Yeah, that sounds right. But anyway, so. Yeah, they recruited me, or maybe it was the spring. Yeah, it might have been that like early spring before I started playing my sophomore year for school. But yeah, they recruited me, and at the time, Augie Garrido was still I had kind of heard things that like he was kind of out the door after that year.
Yeah.
So like I didn't know who the head coach was going to be. Same thing happened with Baylor. Like, you know, obviously both programs got good, you know, solid coaches, but at the time it was just like, I don't want to have like that uncertainty, like if I'm committing to a coach, like I want to commit to someone that's going to be there the whole time I'm going to be there, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And so I kind of got that out of the A&M coaches. It was just like, yeah, he's, you know, pretty secure, like he's coming off some good seasons, like they're kind of building something special. That's kind of the way I looked at it. And obviously their facilities and, you know, education, fan base, you know, you name it, like tradition, culture, like it was all there. And, you know, that's where I just felt the most comfortable.
The only shitty thing is, like, when you were at A&M, they were kind of shit at football, right? Like, they weren't that good when you were there. Like, now they're starting to get, like, the number one recruiting class, all that type of stuff. But when the team isn't good there, like, is it just – do you wish you went there when they have, like, the Johnny Manziel years, like, where it's, like, you can't even fucking move in the stadium, it's so packed and stuff like that? Like, Yeah. Was it kind of a bummer that you went there, kind of the only little span they had when they weren't that good? Like, or were fans still like, was it still packed all the time and stuff like that?
No, it's still packed. I mean, regardless, I mean, it's Aggie football, right? Like, it's always going to be packed regardless of how well or bad they're doing. I would say, like, I mean, I wouldn't trade the time that I had there, you know, especially watching. I mean, because we beat Bama twice. We almost beat Clemson. I mean, we've had that 7-8 overtime game against LSU. Like, those games, like, I'm always going to remember. You know, I think, like, yes, they weren't, you know, they're a little bit above average. Like, I think they were like, what, 7-7 or 8-6 or something like that. But they would always win their bowl games and they would always go on to be fine. But I do think, like, the standard now is, like, set, like, we're winning national championships instead of, like, just getting to a bowl game.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I think that's kind of where the biggest difference was once Jimbo came in. Jimbo was like, we're building something to win national championships, kind of like that Nick Saban-esque. You know, and they literally just built a like a brand new weight room, like, kind of revamped their whole locker room and stuff. And, like, they are now building, like, just an insane, I don't even know how much it's going to, millions of dollars worth of like an indoor and outdoor practice facility on the other side, just to, like, I'm like, dude, it's like, people don't understand how much money A&M has. I mean, the donors donate so much money. Like, there is so much money invested into A&M athletics. And it's not because of how we're raising it. It's literally because the donors are just shooting out money because they're just like, here, we'll give you what you need. Like, it's never a question if it, because, like, a lot of schools are like, man, we don't know if we can raise this much money. A&M's like, how much do you need? We'll give it to you.
That is crazy. And they're going to start getting pissed if they don't start winning natties or coming close to natties or just going to playoffs sooner or later. Because, yeah, like you said, they invest so much money. They have the number one recruiting class this year, I believe it is, and the year before. Or I think it's just this year. It's just, if they don't start winning, there's going to be a lot of people coming for Jimbo Fisher's head. Going to be crazy. So do you find it weird though? It's kind of like there's a lot of running jokes that, like, it's like a cult. Everyone has to show their graduation ring at the University of Texas A&M. Like, are you one of those guys? You didn't graduate, right? You only went there for 3 years?
Yeah, I went there for 3 years. I mean, I do have my Aggie ring, but I don't really wear it because it doesn't fit me right now. I have to get it, like, resized. But it's like, you get it once you complete 90 hours. So, like, I've gotten above that, obviously. So I just have a little under two more semesters left.
Okay. All right. I respect that. I mean, it's just like, it's a cult, realistically. Like, people have to let you know they went to A&M, which is, I would be the same way because that's a sick ass school to go to. Yeah. Is it like, obviously, you're probably not like a big party guy and stuff like that or go out guy, but is it one of the big party schools? Like, is Texas like the king when it comes to party schools, or where does it go?
Are you talking about Texas A&M?
Yeah, like Texas A&M. Like, is Texas A&M like the big dog party school, or like, how does that work?
Oof, big dog party school. I mean, it's hard to say. Like, I feel like I've heard a lot of, like, different things. Obviously, like, I always hear about, like, ASU, like, Arizona State, like, being, like, a huge party school. Or I've heard TCU is a pretty big party school now, too. But, yeah, I would definitely say, like, we get pretty rowdy, like, especially, like, after, like, big games and stuff that we win. Like, our bar district, Northgate, is just – freaking slammed to the brim with people, like, just stacking on top of each other, like, going crazy. So I mean, and we have, it's like, it's kind of cool because it's like a big block of bars, like, that's where all of our bars are, so, like, it's all within walking distance. Like, I know, like, whenever my wife, she went to Texas Tech for a little bit, like, their bars are kind of, like, all spread out, so it's like you can't really, like, bar hop, and that kind of sucks. But, like, yeah, A&M, like, huge big bar districts. In the kind of right next to the stadium, like, you just have to walk like a few blocks down and it's like right there.
That's so sick, dude. I'm in love with just College Station. Like, I have to go to a game, like an SEC game. I'm a Michigan fan, so I've only been to like University of Michigan games.
Well, that's setting the standard though, the Big House, man. That's,
yeah, it is setting the standard. But the thing about the University of Michigan is, like, how do I say it? It's like, it's Northeast partying, right? I mean, the SEC, they always say like they do it different, you know, like I've been to the bars in Michigan and stuff like that. I know a couple guys that went there, but it just looks like it's different at College Station or like Alabama.
Yeah,
or
Well, when you're in the South, I mean, it's hot outside. Like, you know, people are setting up tents. We're grilling, we're barbecuing, like a lot of beers going around, like a lot of keg stands. I mean, just a bunch. I mean, and then like, you'll get a lot of fraternities that'll throw out like, you know, whatever money that they have to, you know, host parties like before games, like tailgates.
Yeah.
Like, tailgating is insane. I will say that.
That's sick.
It's like right outside of Reed Arena. There's like just huge grass areas. That's where people like, that's where the big like fraternities and stuff like the setup. And you just walk through there and you're just like, holy shit.
It's crazy. Dude, it's like, I love it. I couldn't imagine being a guy like Johnny Manziel living there. Oh. And I understand why the guy had a, like, not a drinking problem, but just loved to party, because that guy could probably get away with so much shit there. Probably just he got everything for free. I don't think that guy paid for a damn thing there at the bar or anything like that. So he was a legend there. Like, dude, people still tell stories or like locals there about the shit that he used to do, because he was crazy.
I mean, we would see him periodically, just like, I don't know why we would see him, but just like randomly, like I was at McAllister's one day just getting a sandwich, and like he walked in and like ordered and walked out, and I was just like, what? like how did that happen?
He's so sick. He's crazy.
Yeah, he just kind of hangs around, I guess.
Dude, and I got to go into this. So obviously, I read in your MLB, because I always do these little funny skits where I just read the horny MLB scout bio that they write about the players. And there was one actually about another Mariners prospect. He's like 18. He's a pitcher, and he's like really tall, and he throws like 95. I'm trying to remember his name. I don't remember his name. But this scout had one of the most horny bios. He's like, look how muscular he is. Look at his thighs. I was like, dude, what the fuck are you talking about? It just like, that's just crazy.
I don't think I've ever seen that.
I made a whole skit about it. Like, I read the whole tweet, because it was like, this guy was horny. Like, this guy was horny as hell reading this. It was just one of the funniest things. But so I read your bio that obviously at Texas A&M, I think you struggled your first year or second year. But what turned you into a second round draft pick was the Cape Cod League. So the Cape Cod League is, for people that don't know that are listening, it's obviously all the best college players in America play in this league. So you got hit. I believe you won the batting title there. Is that correct? Humble brag. Is that good? So when you were there, is that when you kind of realized, like, listen, I'm way better than like what I've done at Texas A&M. Like, this is where I kind of put myself on the map.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, kind of looking back on it, like I'm a very mental player, as far as like I overthink and I overanalyze a lot of things. And I think like I just got so far up in my head that my sophomore spring just did not pan out the way I wanted it to. And basically at that point, I mean, a lot of scouts would tell me like, dude, you weren't even on our radar. Like, there was no freshman year was promising, but like I really needed to show out my sophomore year to like kind of prove myself. And I didn't. And they were like, yeah, like you weren't even like a prospect at that point, like that we were trying to scout and get into the pro. So I was like, at that point, I kind of had that in the back of my head. And so whenever I did go to the Cape, I was like, I literally have nothing to lose. Like, I just want to go out there and just play my game, like just take it day by day. And luckily I was in a great spot with my hitting coach in Falmouth. He introduced me to a toe tap, and I got away from a huge leg kick that I had that was very inconsistent, and like it just calmed me down. Like, it helped me to increase my contact rate, but also like just squaring the ball up, like just focusing on like catching barrels. And like ever since then, I mean, you know, fast forward, like, you know, like you said, winning the batting title, I was 2 points over Nick Gonzalez, who's a damn good player. And, you know, I think it was just, I think at that point, like, it gave me the confidence going into my junior year, like, you know, I can do this, like, this is something that I can. And then obviously that's when COVID hit, but before COVID hit, I think I was hitting the 400s still, like 420, 430, something Jesus. Like that. And had like, I think at that point I had like 6 or 7 homers. You know, so, I mean, it, I think it just goes to show, like, you know, your mind is your biggest enemy. Like, and that's even in pro ball. Like, I see a lot of guys, like, it's not the talent that separates you. It's your mindset. Like, if you can conquer and dominate your mindset every day, like, you're going to be in the major leagues if you can be consistent with it.
Let's go to draft day. So you get drafted 2nd round, which is obviously a pretty good chunk of change. We'll talk about that later. So you get drafted 2nd round. Was that where you expected to go, or was, like, because of that Cape Cod League, you were expecting a little bit in the first? Or,
like, so just put it in perspective, like, the 2020 draft was different than any other draft, right? Like, every team was trying to conserve their money, like, trying to not necessarily lowball, but just, like, they were trying to get guys for way less than they should have signed for. And so that was really scary because, like, no one really knew how that draft was going to go. And luckily my agency, who's actually out of Little Rock, that's where I am right now. But they are, they're frontline agencies, and both of the guys that are working for me, I mean, they did a great job of just, like, communicating with me, like, being there, like, in my corner, like, kind of fighting for me. And I think and to answer your question, I don't know if I saw myself as a 2nd rounder. It was very uncertain, like, kind of what my agents have told me was, it's going to take a team to fall in love with you to go higher in that 2nd round. And I was like, okay. Like, I mean, I kind of knew, like, okay, like, there's a few teams here and there. I think, like, the Diamondbacks were in the mix for that competitive balance round. In that first round on that first day. So, like, we were watching just to make sure, but I think both of my agents knew, like, the Mariners were going to make a right at slot offer. And, you know, that was more than what I was expecting. So obviously I was just like, deal, let's do it. Like, I'm locked in.
I love draft stories. That's so sick. I mean, and obviously, like I said, I'm not going to say the money, but you signed for a chunk of change. What's the dumbest thing you bought, or, like, the most expensive thing you bought? I'm assuming the most expensive thing is the wedding, right? It has to be that, obviously, that you just had. But what other than the wedding, obviously, like, that's just the cliche answer. What's, like, a car, like, what car are you ripping around in? Like, what did you get that's expensive?
I wanted to get 2 things. I wanted to get a house. I wanted to get a new truck. I got both of them. Me and my wife, we're living in Waco, Texas. That's where she's from. It's, you know, close enough to Dallas to where, you know, we can get there pretty easy. And it's right in the middle of Texas, so we can literally get anywhere within a span of like 2 to 3 hours at the most. So, and then, yeah, I'm driving a 2022 King Ranch right now. So
that'll play. That'll fucking play.
It's nice.
That'll play, dude. That's so electric. Obviously, we get funny stories of, like, guys getting dropped out of high school here that are buying, like, Gucci track suits, or shout out Cole Franklin. That's a chirp to Cole Franklin. Or just, like, Gucci bags, stuff like that. So you don't have any, like, you didn't get anything that's really dumb, like, just any.
I'm not, like, a huge, like, jewelry guy. Like, I wear, like, I have 2 chains on me. Like, I have just a cross necklace that I've been wearing. And then, like, my wife got me, like, this just simple, like, white gold chain.
Yeah,
but I don't wear, like, I'm not a huge, like, I gotta get, like, the Cuban links, like, gotta, you know, get the huge, like, gold, like, so, I mean, some guys are like that, and that's just not me. Like, I'd rather spend it on stuff that's important,
like golf. Like, are you spending it on golf?
I bought myself a set of new clubs, bought myself some Sim 2s. So, like, that's that's playing. I actually just started golf, though, like, this past year, so, like, I'm still kind of getting into it, but I'm playing right-handed, which is, like, if you were to ask me, it's pretty interesting. Like, I don't, like, my brother's huge into golf, and he's a left-handed hitter because he played baseball left-handed, and, like, he just picked up golf probably 3 or 4 years ago, And he's been, I mean, he's been playing like almost every day. It seems like every time I call him, he's like, "Hey, I'm on the golf course." Like,
I love it. That's a guy's guy. That's a guy's guy. Yeah,
but he's, he actually is going to school at A&M. So he's down there in College Station right now. But anyways, he plays left-handed. And I remember the first swing I took left-handed, like I just shanked it like so bad. And he was like, "Here, just turn around and, you know, hit right-handed." And he said, it felt so weird to me, but he's like, "Dude," he's like, "You're not going to believe this, but like, I think your right-handed swing is probably going to be better for golf."
That is crazy. So you hit left-handed in baseball and you hit right-handed on the golf. Like, so do you think you could be a switch hitter in baseball? Like just based off of like the same leg movement?
With golf, like, I mean, obviously the ball's not moving. So like, it's a lot easier to like, you know, work on mechanics, like not have to think about like, oh, like, I mean, cause I've been hitting left-handed ever since I was basically walking, like ever since I was like 5-6 years old, like hitting, playing t-ball, like I've always hit left-handed, and it's still, baseball's still hard.
Yeah, true.
So it's like I don't think I'd ever be able to hit right-handed in baseball.
That is crazy. Then obviously we got to go into Jermonity Kirk. So obviously, I mean, you're the 12th ranked prospect in the Mariners. I don't know if you like look into that or knew that. Maybe like you, because I know what you're. A lot of your family members of guys that are in the minor leagues, they all look into that. So I'm sure you're like right. Parents and your siblings all. Yeah,
they'll mention it every now and then. Like, it's mainly my grandparents.
So you're the 12th ranked prospect, obviously. I mean, what's your minor league career been like so far? Because obviously you raked in high A. You hit .313, so that was an easy adjustment for you. What was like the biggest challenge you kind of noticed, like just the pitching, or what was it?
I mean, everyone always says like the biggest jump in minor league baseball is from high A to double A. Like, I think it's just the one, it's the talent. Like, you're going to get guys that have better stuff, throwing harder. Second would probably be the, just the speed of the game. Like, I know it sounds kind of cliche, but like I just remember like in high, like the game was not sped up on me at all. Like, I just basically had to take control. And then once I got to double A, it was like, man, like, why does the game feel so fast right now? But yeah, man, it's a true story. Like, I think, and now that they're adding the pitch clock in, like, we're really having to be conscious of like, you know, where our mind and body's at, like, just as far as like just being present. Like, it's a hard game now. I mean, I think we had like a 2-hour game yesterday. And like, what? That was so fast. Yeah, it was something ridiculous, like 2 hours and like 15 minutes or 2 hours and 10 minutes or something ridiculous. And, but yeah, dude, it was like, it was crazy. It really was. Like, and then I think double A, triple A, and majors, like, there's not a huge difference as far as like the stuff that you're seeing. I think it's just more guys that are able to spot up better with their stuff. More experience, obviously. I mean, obviously you'll get your unicorns like DeGrom and Scherzer and Otani and all those guys. But like, for the most part, I mean, you know, the average fastball is now like what, 94, 95. And like, I think that's pretty fair to say, like, that's most of the time, like what we're seeing in double A. So
I want to do my journalism here. I got to ask you. So you're mentioning the pitch clock, and I'm going to clip this, put this on Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, all that stuff. Describe the pitch clock like I'm 5. Like, describe it to me like I'm 5. What are the punishments if you exceed the pitch clock as a hitter, as a pitcher? Like, just go into that.
Yeah. So for the, trying to think, for the pitcher. So the pitcher, when they have like, I think they have either, it's like a minute 30 or 2 minutes to between each inning to basically warm up, be ready to throw. When the pitch clock on that hits like 20 seconds, they have to be like, or 18 seconds or something like that, they have to be on the mound, like basically ready to go. The hitter has a hitter's clock. And yeah, it's so, and they, so like, I think it's like when you're walking from the on deck to the batter's box, you have 18, I think it's like 17 or 18 seconds. And when the clock hits 9, you have to be in the box, attentive to the pitcher, like ready to hit. And then the pitcher has to pitch the ball like you know, before the clock hits zero, basically. And if either one of us, the penalty is, you know, the hitter gets a strike on him and then the pitcher gets a ball in the count. Those are like the two penalties.
That is and so then, bush, bro.
And then I think, and then the other one is, if the pitcher disengages or picks off, they can only do it twice and they have to throw to the plate within that at bat. So within that same at bat with that guy. So it's, yeah, it's kind of, it's definitely a little different for sure.
Eyewash. I'll say it for you. It's eyewash. It doesn't make more people want to watch the game. I don't give a shit about that. So wait a second. So just from a strategic standpoint, I could get picked off twice. Like someone could try to pick me off twice. And then I just know I'm stealing. Like after two times, like if he doesn't look at me, I'm just stealing. Like I cause he can't throw off. That is crazy. Yeah.
But then, you know, I think the stupidest thing is like, if the catcher, you know, obviously the pitcher's not really paying attention to the pitch clock. The catcher is more the one that has to be like the attentive one to that. And like it happened to me yesterday where I think the pitch clock got down to like two or one and the catcher just ended up calling time. And I was like, okay, if we're doing that, then what's the point of, you know what I mean? Like it just didn't make any sense to me. And I don't know.
I think that's going to make it.
I basically said, I told because we did it in the fall league this year. We had all these like same things. We had bigger bases.
Yeah.
We had the pitch clock. We had there's some other stuff that we had too that I was just like, okay, like the automated strike zone with the track man using that. The umpire has like a little earpiece that tells him balls and strikes. So basically, robo ump. But I think that the one that everyone did not like was the pitch clock. But it's like we give our opinion about it. It's like, I don't think they care.
And the,
especially since we're minor leaguers.
So is the automated strike zone pretty accurate? Like, would you say, or is it? Cause
So it was accurate, but here's the deal. Like, cause everyone's all different shapes and sizes. They did it to us during spring training. I know for the Mariners, they did. I don't know about everyone else, but the TrackMan people actually came and like measured certain measurements, like where our hip bone was, like from the ground up, like where, like how long our torso was, and some other stuff just to try to figure out, like, I guess like the shape of our zone or like the size of it. Cause like you would have, you know, shorter guys like getting rung up on balls at their neck, because it's like a fixed, it was a fixed zone.
That's, oh my God, dude.
So that was like the biggest complaint that I think we all had was like, dude, if you're going to make automatic strike zone, robo ump, you better, you know, be able to make it fit everyone differently, because it's not fair. Like if Altuve's zone is as big as Judge's, like that's not, that's not a solvable plan. So.
So crazy. I still can't wrap my head around it. I really can't. It's bananas to me, but I guess that's just me. Just not really. I guess human error, I guess, is way better in my opinion than having robots, but I guess I'll have to adjust to it. But so far in your minor league career, so a couple more things here. So far in your minor league career, obviously you've got to see some of these cities and stuff like that. And you were living the high life at A&M. You got the nicest facilities. You obviously private jets where you guys would fly away or stuff like that. What's the minor leagues been like? Like, do you have like a funny minor league story? Like, this is so minor leagues, like just where I'm at right now, or just the food that I'm eating, or like the field I'm playing at?
Oh yeah. There's a few stories. I would say, we always did bus trips. We always have done bus trips. And, I think, what was it, last year in Everett, you know, we never did an overnight bus, but like we would always get back like super late, like to our field at like 3 or 4 in the morning.
Jeez.
And it was just, I think one of our guys' cars got broken into, and they stole like some AirPods or something and some other stuff. And I was just like, you know what? It's like this would never happen if we were in the big leagues. like it's just one of those things, like you just think about it, you're just like, you get back at 3 in the morning, you see your car's broken into, you're just like, oh gosh, like that's so bad. And Yeah, man. Gosh, we stop at every gas station, like every nice gas station, like for whenever we've been driving for like, 3 or 4 hours, and if it was like an 8 hour bus ride, we would always stop. And like hotels, like I think we stayed like in a haunted hotel in Spokane or something.
I've heard stories about that.
Yeah, like Spokane, apparently, like this hotel we stayed at, like was apparently like someone died in it or something. And but it's always been like haunted, like in this one room, and I'm like, okay, I'm out on that. So that's I've heard done that one. I'm trying to think. Oh, Tri-Cities, that was probably the worst visiting clubhouse that
really.
It had no air conditioning. It was dirty, like on the floors. Our laundry was always wet. Showers were not good. We were there when it was the hottest week. It was 115.
Oh my God.
And I think this was in May. So like just out of nowhere, it got a heat wave for a whole week and we were all dying. Like just absolutely dying. Like it was to the point where like our coaches like told us like, hey, we're not showing up until like an hour before the game. We're not doing any pregame. Like,
oh my God. The cage,
but we'll just go straight into it. Like it was so bad.
That's a pro baseball team. That's for people's sake, that's a pro baseball team. Like, let's just let that sink in. Yeah. I mean, just incredible. It's tough. It's just tough to be a professional baseball player and have to deal with that stuff. It really is. So, And I obviously, like, I should be experiencing that in JUCO. I shouldn't be experiencing that, like, when I'm a pro baseball player. But, and I want to talk about that Julio Rodriguez kid. Have you had a chance to watch him up close and, like, see?
Oh, yeah. I played with him all last year, basically.
Okay. So, what is
him? Me and him are tight, yeah.
I'm going to clip this because, obviously, the Mariners fans just get going when you talk about Julio. Rightfully so. He's disgusting. What's it like watching this guy day in and day out and seeing what this guy does?
Yeah. I mean, he plays the game hard. I mean, he's a hard-nosed player. Like, he puts his head down. He grinds. I mean, he's a funny guy too. Like he always jokes around and always wants to have fun. Like he just, I think the one word that he always talks about is just have fun, like on the field, like just, be a kid, like you're 12 years old. Like, don't try to take this game too seriously or else it'll just catch up to you. But, just try to live every day in the moment. I think that's kind of his motto. And, he does play the game with some flash. He does play the game with some flair. Like he has his, he's got his personality into it for sure. But I think like, just like the rest of us, like he's been chasing a dream that, he was able to fulfill this year and getting to the big league. And so I think like he's, I think he's done everything the right way. Like he rakes.
He's so good.
He's fast. He's definitely the, he's definitely a unicorn, man, when it comes to baseball. I mean, he hits the ball so hard. I mean, it's unbelievable how hard the guy hits the baseball.
Did you do anything where you were like, you got to see and you're like, I can't believe this guy just did that? Like, is there any games or just moments that stood out to you that he had?
I'm trying to think. Like, I think I remember this. I remember he was at the Olympics. A good portion of last year. And when he got back to AA, we were, cause like, I think I had just gotten moved up and he wasn't back yet.
Yeah.
When he got back, he was like, man, he's like, I don't have enough stolen bases. He's like, I'm going to go steal 15 bags. He literally stole 15 bags or 10 to 15. I can't remember how many it was, but like, I just remember being an absurd amount. Like he would steal second, he would steal third and like just doing it on command. And like he would do it with ease too. Like it wasn't hard for him. And so it was just hilarious, like watching him, like just basically call shots. Like he's one of those guys that could call his shots and he could do it.
How is his English? Is his English good?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. He's pretty fluent.
He's like the white whale of this pod. Like honestly, we've had Frazier, Winker, we've had all these guys, but I need me some fucking Julio Rodriguez on this podcast. We need to figure something out. I need this. I need the Zach DeLo. I need you. I need you to plug it because obviously he's electric, and I would love to just hear stories about like hear stories about just like his upbringing and like when he knew he was nasty and just like hear funny stories. Cause he's so electric. He's so flashy. He wears the J-Rod show chain. Oh, yeah. Have you gone to like touch and feel the J-Rod chain? Like, is it heavy? Yeah, so, I don't understand how people play in that. I really don't. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. So I remember the first day he got it, I think we were in Everett at the time too, but I remember him bringing it out and I was like, J-Rod, like, you got to wear that for the game. He's like, no. And then of course, like the first game that he's in the show or in spring training, like he's wearing it. I'm just like, dude, I was like, come on. But yeah, I actually, he was my roommate for 1 week in Springfield and he left it in the room. Just laying out. I was like, dude, I was like, it's like, I have to put it on. But don't tell him I told you this, but I did put it on. I took a picture with it and I sent it to my brother. He's like, hey, look, guess whose chain this is.
Dude, that's so sick. But don't worry. And one thing I respect is you telling me, like, don't tell him, like, it's 100% certain he's coming on the podcast. I mean, I love the confidence out of you. If you like, just show him the guest list and he'll come on. But if J-Rod comes on this podcast, I might have to custom your jersey and hang it on the rafters at my house. If somehow, some way we get the white whale on this podcast, it would be electric, but we'll figure it out. We'll talk after the podcast. We'll get him on. But last thing I want to talk about is, and actually, no, the second last thing. If you do, when that call up does happen, I want us to kind of, this podcast to be one of the first to know. Like, all you have to do is just DM me or maybe text me the eye emoji. That's it. And I'll be like, okay. I say it's all the guests, by the way. Jonathan Heasley did it. All these guys did it for me. I want to know when that debut is happening. I want to be one of the first dudes to know. I'm not going to break the news. I just want to have that comfortability. Like, all right, this is my guy. He's making his debut.
I appreciate it. Yeah, I definitely will do that.
All right, there it is. So we got that checked off there. I always have this little check bar. That's checked off there. And the last thing, obviously, man, you've been hitting pretty well this year. I believe you're on a 4-game hitting streak, knock on wood. You're just buzzing as of late. What are your goals going into this year? Because obviously last year you were hitting nukes as well. I believe you had 15, yeah, which is bananas. Is it like more stolen bases, like to kind of maintain a good average? Like, do you just not set goals?
No, yeah, no, I do set goals. I'll definitely say, like, you know, trying to be as realistic as possible. I mean, the Mariners have like their own process-based like system that I really try to just work on, because I'm a big believer, like, if my process is good, then like the results will speak for themselves. So it's like, if I can be really good at just being myself and not trying to get ahead, not trying to basically think about the future and just trying to live day by day, like, I think that's where a lot of guys like tend to struggle, is they start getting ahead of themselves and then that's when they start struggling. And I think our organization's really big on just being in the moment, like just trusting what you have. And honestly, just, you know, just hitting, raking.
Yeah.
just hitting the ball really hard.
And that's what you're doing. I mean, 283, very highly touted prospect. But I will say this, MLB.com on your prospecting, they better figure it out. I mean, they're still using a Texas A&M picture for you. I don't know what the deal is with that, but they better figure that out ASAP. Because you look like you're 12 in that picture. You look like one of those young prospects, like from like Dominican, that's just going to be nasty, like those young kids. So they got to figure that out ASAP. But anyways, man, obviously it's long overdue. People don't know this. Me and Zach have been playing some little Instagram tag about this interview. We've been going back and forth. Like, all right, tomorrow 10 a.m., I forget to answer. He forgets to answer. Just some of our – it's good that we finally got this hammered out because the people needed this. We have a pretty good Mariners listening, so it's going to be electric. And by the way, and if you can – like I said, you get J-Rod, the jersey will be hung in the rafters of my residence forever. The Zach Deloach jersey. So I appreciate you doing this, man. I'm fired up for you.
Yes, sir.
Obviously, Double A, you'd love to see it. I mean, you're one step closer. Hopefully they get you to Triple A this year, which is in Nevada? No, not Nevada.
Washington.
Yeah. So anyways, man, it was a pleasure to have you on. We'll do this again after that debut. Or maybe next year, whatever. We'll figure something out. But I really appreciate you coming on the podcast, man.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, John.
Thank you for listening to Officially Unofficial. Make sure you guys subscribe and leave a review on iTunes and follow us on Twitter at Fish on a Fish Pod and on Instagram at Officially Unofficial Pod. Thank you.